Welcome to Daily Wisdom, Walking the Path with the Buddha, a podcast shared by David Roylance. This podcast is dedicated to guiding you to completely eliminate the discontent mind and the suffering it causes by attaining enlightenment. Learn and practice the teachings of Gautama Buddha that will guide you to fully attain a peaceful, calm, serene, and content mind with joy. To support this podcast, visit patreon.com/supportbuddha or visit buddhadailywisdom.com, where you will discover a full range of courses, retreats, and online learning resources to assist you on the path to enlightenment. Now, here's our teacher to share more.
Sawadee kap. Hello and welcome to Daily Wisdom, Walking the Path with the Buddha. Today is our group learning program, and we're in Chapter 4 of this book, Developing a Life Practice, The Path That Leads to Enlightenment. This chapter is titled The Four Noble Truths, Establishing Right View. This is the very first teaching of the Buddha to be able to help you get on the path to enlightenment, having a real breakthrough to understanding what's causing your discontent feelings. Because the path to enlightenment is to eliminate all discontentedness, where you no longer experience any anger, sadness, frustration, irritation, annoyance, guilt, shame, fear, stress, anxiety, loneliness, boredom, shyness, resentment, jealousy, even the slightest displeasure is eliminated from the enlightened mind. But how would you be able to eliminate these discontent feelings if you didn't understand what was causing them? So in four simple statements, you're going to learn about the problem in the unenlightened mind, the cause of that problem, the elimination of it, and the path forward. I'm going to be sharing with you the three universal truths as building blocks to then help you to understand the four noble truths. We're going to first do some meditation in order to help prepare your mind for learning, because when you're meditating prior to learning, it helps you to retain the teachings. It helps you to also learn meditation and train your mind in meditation. So I'm going to start with loving kindness meditation to be able to help you learn and practice loving kindness meditation. And then afterwards, we'll move into learning the Four Noble Truths. And as we go, I'm going to open up to any and all questions that you guys have along the way. So if you'd like to join for meditation, I'm going to first start with some chanting, easing us into meditation, which you're welcome to join into. This Wednesday, I'm going to start a four-part series on Buddhist chanting to help you guys learn the chants. So after the chanting, then I'm going to come in with some guidance for breathing mindfulness meditation and doing that for a short period. Then we'll move into the loving kindness meditation, where you'll hear me saying these affirmations and you'd like to repeat those in the mind on the out breath. Then we'll go back to a little bit of breathing mindfulness meditation and come out of the meditation with some more chanting. If you'd like to have either the seated, lying, or standing positions, these are the three positions that work really well with loving kindness meditation. There's also a walking position for meditation, but we don't typically do loving kindness meditation in that position. So take a position that's comfortable for you. And again, if you'd like to join in with the chants, you're welcome to. And then I'll come back with some guidance. Arahaṃ sammasambuddho bhagavā Bhūtaṃ bhagavannaṃ abhivādayāmi Savakkhāto bhagavatā dhammo Dhammaṃ namassāmi Supatipanno bhagavato Savakkasangho Sanghaṃ namāmi Namo arhassa bhagavato Arahato sammasambuddhassa Namo arhassa bhagavato Arahato sammasambuddhassa Namo arhassa bhagavato Arahato Sambuddhassa. Iti Pisu Makawa Arahang Samasamoto Wicca Charanang Samuno Sakatoro Kawito Anuttaro Purisa Dhammasati Satatava Manusanang Putto Bhagavati. Okay, with the lower body and hands and arms comfortable, in the upper body erect, just close the eyes and start breathing in through the nose and out through the nose. Here you're just looking to establish the breath, a nice, natural, steady, consistent breath. Not forced or controlled, just a gradual inhale through the nose, experiencing the full breath. And then, whenever you're ready, exhale out through the nose. Breathing in. And out. Breathing in. And out. Your breath may not match up with the guidance that I'm providing, and that's okay. This is your practice. I'm just here for guidance. You can use this voice as a reminder that whenever you get to the next inhale, breathing gradually through the nose, developing a nice, natural, steady, consistent breath. And then when you're ready, exhale out through the nose, experiencing the full breath. Breathing in and out. Breathing in and out. Once the breath is well established, start fixating the mind on the breath, either the sound of the breath coming into the nose or the sensation of air moving over the skin into the nose. The breath is the present moment. Fixate the mind on the breath, the present moment. Breathing in. And out. Breathing in. And out. With the mind fixated on the breath, whenever you notice that it moves off the breath, cut that off, let it go, and come back to the breath, the present moment. No need to observe the thought, label it, judge it, analyze it, or even try to figure out where it's coming from. Whenever you notice that the mind is moved off the breath, cut that off, let it go, and come back to the breath, the present moment. Breathing in and out. breathing in. And out. I'm going to be quiet now and let you do this work of focusing on the breath, cutting off and letting go anytime the mind moves off the breath. Then I'll come back with more guidance on loving kindness meditation. You have nowhere to go. There's nothing to do. No one needs you right now. This is your time to focus on the breath. Breathing in and out. Continuing to breathe in through the nose and out through the nose. Repeat these affirmations in the mind on the out breath. Mm. May I be peaceful. May I be safe. May I be well. May I be free of all discontentedness in the suffering it causes. May my mom and dad be peaceful. May they be safe. May they be well. May they be free of all discontentedness in the suffering it causes. May my family, friends, neighbors, and co-workers all be peaceful. May they be safe. May they be well. May they be free of all discontentedness in the suffering it causes. May all those who have caused me harm be peaceful. May they be safe. May they be well. May they be free of all discontentedness and the suffering it causes. May all those who I have harmed be peaceful. May they be safe. May they be well. May they be free of all discontentedness in the suffering it causes. May all beings, wherever they reside, be peaceful. May they be safe. May they be well. May they be free of all discontentedness and the suffering it causes. Now return back to breathing mindfulness meditation, focusing on the breath, cutting off and letting go anytime the mind moves off the breath. Breathing in, and out. Arahaṃ sammāsambuddhaṃ Patipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghaṃ Namāmi Namo Arhasa Bhagavato Arahato Sammāsambuddhassa Namo Arhasa Bhagavato Arahato
Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Arhassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Iti bhisu bhagava araham sammasambuddho. Vicacaranam sammuno sakato rokavito. Anutero purisa dhamma sati satatava manusanam puto bhagavati.
Okay, if you'd like to slowly make your way out of meditation, I would like to welcome all of you guys to today's class. This is the group learning program, as I mentioned, and we're in chapter 4, which is titled The Four Noble Truths, Establishing Right View. If there is one class that you're going to take about the teachings of the Buddha your entire life and no other classes, this would actually be that class to take. And of course, once you take this class and you learn the Four Noble Truths, you will most likely be interested to learn even more, because here in the Four Noble Truths, you can have a real breakthrough to understanding what's finally causing this anger and sadness and frustration and all these other discontent feelings that you've been struggling with throughout your life. You're going to understand the problem, the cause of this problem, the elimination of it, and the path forward. You can have a real breakthrough to now finally understanding what's causing it, so that you can actually apply the tools and techniques from the Buddha to actually eliminate them. And that's what the enlightened mind is where the mind is stable and steady and unshakable, that it's peaceful, calm, serene, and content with joy permanently, no longer experiencing any discontent feelings, where the focus, concentration, and clarity and deep memory can shine through. You'll notice your personal, professional relationships really improve and blossom, because you're no longer being bitter and harsh and hostile in these relationships, and now you can experience peacefulness and joy throughout your life. But this requires an understanding of the Four Noble Truths and all the other teachings that the Buddha shares. You're going to need to learn them, to reflect on them, to independently verify them and practice them, integrating them into your life and transforming the mind and uprooting various pollutions that the Buddha discovered. So as you're learning today, and any other day that you learn with me, whether it's in class or in a recording or through the book, it's important that you don't believe anything that I share with you, because belief isn't going to get you to enlightenment. With belief, you don't know what's true or false. It's important that you learn, that you investigate, that you examine the teachings, that you reflect on them to independently verify them, and then you practice them. And this is how your mind awakens, because it gains wisdom of the natural laws around you. The Buddha didn't teach the way the world should be, and that if everybody follows certain rules and commandments or does rites, rituals, ceremonies, and worship, that the world will become peaceful and joyful. Instead, he's explaining to you the way the world is. And by understanding the way the world is, awakening to the wisdom of these natural laws, this is what will help you to then move to this peaceful and joyful mental state. Because when you live in a world that you don't understand, you will struggle and you will have difficulties. And that's what the anger and the sadness and all that stress and anxiety and everything else is all about. It's because the mind lacks wisdom and it doesn't understand the world that it lives in, so it struggles. These natural laws of existence that the Buddha taught, they affect you whether you're aware of them or not. Just like the natural law of gravity that you awoke to as you were aging, you need to awake to these natural laws of existence. The natural law of gravity is something that none of us understood when we were growing up. We were having this unknowing of true reality. We lacked wisdom of this natural law, and we struggled and we had difficulties. We fell down, we hit our head, we bumped our elbows, we broke open our knees maybe, we broke our toys. We had all kinds of difficulties. This natural law of gravity was affecting us whether we were aware of it or not. And because we didn't have wisdom of this natural law, we made unwise decisions that led to unwholesome results. But slowly but surely, we gain wisdom of this natural law of gravity through our own direct experience and being able to see the truth for ourselves. And then once we gain wisdom of this natural law, we started making wiser decisions that led to wholesome results. We no longer struggle with the natural law of gravity because we've learned. Over the course of our life, when we were maybe 10, 12, or 14 years old, we ended up getting to the point where we tied our shoes a bit tighter. We looked at the surface of the sidewalk when we were walking. We made all these different decisions because we understood this natural law. We no longer struggled and have difficulties with it. Now you're at the point where you can potentially ride a bicycle, climb a ladder, get on airplanes, and travel all over the world because you understand this natural law of gravity. You fully awoke to it. You don't believe in it. You know that it's true, and therefore you make wiser decisions that produce wholesome results. Well, the same thing needs to occur with the natural laws of existence. The mind needs to awaken to this wisdom through gradual training, gradual practice, and gradual progress. You awaken to this wisdom, and now you navigate the world in an improved way. And now through making wise decisions, you'll experience wholesome results. So the teachings that I have to share with you today, the three universal truths and the four noble truths, are something that you should not believe in, but you need to learn, reflect, and practice. And as we go in today's class, I'm going to show you exactly how to do that. But I just like to always talk here at the beginning of the Four Noble Truths, because oftentimes this is the beginning of the journey for somebody on the path to enlightenment. And it's so important to understand that the Buddha didn't teach a bunch of beliefs. And if you believe these things, then something good will happen when you die. It's through learning, reflecting, and practicing now in this life that because you're learning now, reflecting now, and practicing now, you experience the results now in this life. And that's the work that you're doing on the path to enlightenment. So as we go, feel free to ask any and all questions that you like about any of the teachings that I'm sharing with you. You can put that into Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom. Or in Zoom, you can raise your hand electronically and ask any and all questions that you like. We refer to this as the three universal truths and the four noble truths because the Buddha knew that they were true. I know that they're true, and other people know that they're true as well, but you're going to need to know that they're true. So here, let me show you how to intellectually learn something and then reflect on it and then understand how to practice it. So this first universal truth, which these three universal truths are building blocks to help you understand the four noble truths. The universal truth of impermanence is teaching you that things are constantly changing. There isn't this steady, fixed state of certain objects in the world. Anything that you see, that you hear, that you smell, that you taste, anything that comes in contact with the body, and any thoughts or ideas that go through the mind, these are all impermanent. They're what's called a conditioned object. A conditioned object arises, it changes, and it fades away. This is the universal truth of impermanence, helping you to understand that everything around you is impermanent. There are things called unconditioned objects, like enlightenment itself is unconditioned. It doesn't arise, it doesn't change, it doesn't fade away. The natural laws of existence, the teachings, those are also unconditioned. They don't arise, change, or fade away. What the Buddha described as natural laws during his lifetime are the exact same natural laws that exist now during this lifetime because they don't change. This is why his teachings are just as applicable today as they were 2,500 years ago. The books have changed, the people's memories have changed. These kinds of things are all subject to impermanence, but the natural laws themselves have not changed. So his teachings are timeless. They apply during his lifetime and they apply now as well because they are an unconditioned object. But all conditioned objects are going to arise, change, and fade away. And everything around you that you can see, hear, smell, taste, that comes in contact with the body and that goes through your mind is an impermanent object. It's a conditioned object. It arises, changes, and fades away. So this is the learning part. Very short, very simple, helping you to understand the universal truth of impermanence. But now you don't believe that. That's just something I'm teaching you. Now you move into reflection. As you hear your teacher teaching, you would like to independently verify whether it's true or whether it's false. So now what you do is you start looking at things in the world to try to determine if what I'm just sharing is actually true. You look around the world and try to see if you can find something that's permanent. Because if you can find something that's permanent, this is not a universal truth. So what I suggest you do is you start with something that you're familiar with, like the human body. You're very familiar with this. Ask yourself, is this body permanent or is it impermanent? If the body's permanent, then that means it stayed the same your entire life and it's never changed. If it's impermanent, then that means it's constantly changing. So you need to ask yourself that and answer the question, is it permanent or impermanent? Well, of course, you're probably answering that yes, it's impermanent, right? Because our hair grows, we cut it, our teeth grow in, they fall out, and they grow in again. Our height changes, we get a little bit of fat maybe, we get a mole, a pimple, our hair color changes, we maybe get gray hair, we start losing our hair. These are all physical changes that are happening to the body because this body is impermanent. Ask yourself about your relationships. Are they permanent or impermanent? If your relationships are permanent, you've had exactly the same people in your life your entire life. If your relationships are impermanent, you've had people coming and going in and out of your life at different times during your life. So are your relationships permanent or impermanent? Of course, they're impermanent, right? What about your bank account? Is your bank account permanent or is it impermanent? And what you'll come back with is, yes, it's impermanent. It's constantly changing. It's going up and down and up and down. Some people's goes up, up, up. Some goes down, down, down. Your bank account is constantly changing. What about the weather? Is the weather permanent or is it impermanent? Of course, it's impermanent, right? So you can look around the world and you can go out into the world and you can see that things are constantly changing. Whether you look at a tree and it used to not have leaves and now it has leaves. But now it has leaves and they're green and they're going to get brown and they're going to fall down on the ground. This is all impermanence. When you're walking down the sidewalk and you see a crack in the sidewalk, that is impermanence. You're looking at a fence and you see the paint color changing and fading away. This is impermanence. So you can look at thing after thing after thing after thing, and you will see everything around you is impermanent. And this is a building block to help you understand the Four Noble Truths. So you're going to need to deeply soak this into the mind so you can see everything around you is impermanent. The second universal truth is called discontentedness. This is oftentimes referred to as suffering, depending on where you've learned, but I'm going to explain to you what this is and help you understand why I don't use the word suffering. What the Buddha is doing here in this universal truth is he's explaining to you what the unenlightened mind experiences, which are conditioned feelings. I translate this as discontent, discontented, or discontentedness, because the original word in the original source teachings is dukkha. You might have heard this word too. Dukkha is translated as discontent, discontented, and discontentedness. It doesn't mean suffering, because when the Buddha describes this universal truth, he describes it as a pleasant feeling, a painful feeling, and a feeling that is neither painful nor pleasant. This is what the unenlightened mind experiences, conditional feelings. So when the mind gets what it wants, it experiences pleasant feelings like happiness, excitement, elation, thrill, exhilaration, euphoria. But when it doesn't get what it wants, it gets painful feelings like sadness, anger, frustration, irritation, annoyance, guilt, shame, fear, stress, anxiety. Then there's neither painful nor pleasant. I put boredom and loneliness here. Some people say that that's quite painful for them. So you could put it in the painful category if you'd like. But shyness is a good example of this. Or if you've been on public transportation and somebody comes and sits really close to you and your body is touching their body, you might say, it's not painful, it's not pleasant, the mind's kind of dissatisfied or uncomfortable. This is the neither painful nor pleasant feeling that the unenlightened mind is experiencing. And these are what's called conditioned feelings, that based on some condition, the mind is going to experience pleasant feelings, painful feelings, or neither painful nor pleasant. So based on the condition that it's sunny outside, you might get so happy and excited. Yay, I'm going to go hiking today. I've been wanting to go hiking for a long time. And you might call up your friends and invite them to go hiking, right? But then you go and take a shower and you come outside and you see it's raining. And now, because of that feeling of happiness was conditional, it was based on the sun, now that the sun is no longer there, because that sun is impermanent, now your feeling of happiness is also impermanent. It moves to frustration or agitation or annoyance. This is why you haven't been able to get to permanent happiness your entire life, because the mind in the unenlightened state is basing its inner feelings on some condition. If it's sunny outside, I will be happy. If my bank account balance is this, I will be happy. If my boss does this, I will be happy. If my children or my life partner does this, I will be happy. If my parents do this, I will be happy. But as soon as you form that feeling based on a condition of happiness, and now that feeling of happiness is based on this condition of something occurring, that thing is impermanent. It's going to arise, change, and fade away. So your happiness is the same thing. It's going to arise, change, and fade away. It's a conditioned feeling. So now your mind's going to move to these painful feelings. An enlightened being doesn't experience this, that they've changed the way that their mind functions. They've trained it in its discipline where it doesn't form its inner feelings based on some condition. So an enlightened being seeing it sunny outside, they were already happy before they ever saw the sun. And now they might decide to go hiking, but then when they go take a shower and they come out and they see that it's raining, they're not going to be upset or frustrated. They're going to be like, all right, well, I guess I'll go to the mall or I'll stay home and read a book. Maybe I'll invite my friends over for some dinner. I'll cook them some food. You'll just change your plans because you understand that the sun is impermanent. So therefore, if you form your inner feeling based on something like the sun, then you're setting yourself up for these discontent feelings of painful feelings coming into the mind. So this particular universal truth is explaining the up and down and up and down and up and down that is experienced in the unenlightened mind. And some people refer to this as suffering. I don't refer to it that way because it explains the painful feelings, that if you're experiencing sadness, anger, frustration, or any of these other discontent feelings that are painful, you might say you are suffering. But that's only 33% of this particular universal truth. When you're happy, excited, elated, you probably wouldn't say you are suffering. Or when that person you don't know comes and sits next to you and your body's touching their body, you probably wouldn't say that you are suffering in that situation. You might say your mind's discontent, discontented, or discontentedness. So this explains the full spectrum of feelings that the mind experiences in the unenlightened state. Whereas if we continue to use the word suffering, we're not fully representing what it is that the Buddha taught. So you're missing 66% of his teachings if you use the word suffering. And you wouldn't be able to get to the ultimate goal of the teachings of the Buddha if you were only understanding 66% of his teachings, because the ultimate goal is to eliminate these conditional feelings so that you can get to the unconditioned peace, calmness, serenity, contentedness, and joy, where the mind's just always happy. You're beyond these conditional feelings. So this word discontentedness fully represents what you experience in the unenlightened state. And now that you've learned that, now you start reflecting on it because you're not interested in believing what I'm sharing with you. You reflect on this and now you decide, does this accurately represent what it is that you experience? Because you know that your mind is unenlightened and you can look at any of the feelings that you've had over your life and ask yourself, does that fit into one of these three categories? Is there any feeling that you experience that doesn't fit into one of these three categories? And if you have that thought, then just ask me a question during the question period and I will help you. So this is how you can independently reflect that yes, indeed, this is explaining what the unenlightened mind experiences. It is a universal truth. Then there's the universal truth of non-self. This is actually the solution to one of the problems that the Buddha discovered in the mind. He discovered 10 individual problems. They're referred to as the 10 fetters. We call them fetters because during ancient times, if you were a prisoner, they would put a shackle and a chain and a ball around your ankle, and this would keep you confined in a certain area. Today, we have jail cells and prisons, and that's how we confine criminals into a certain place. But during ancient times, it was a fetter. They would attach a fetter, a shackle, a chain, and a ball to your ankle. And the Buddha describes these 10 pollutions of the mind, or these defilements, or these taints, as fetters, because they're hindering you from being able to experience the brightness and the radiance and the joy of the enlightened mind. So there's one particular fetter, the first one, called personal existence view. This is where the mind in the unenlightened state has the misunderstanding or the confusion or the misperception that this body or this mind is you, and this is who you are as a person. So the mind clings to a certain self-image associated with the body, or a certain self-identity associated with the mind. And now the mind is going to experience discontentedness because it's clinging to the body and the mind. So if you've ever spilt pizza sauce or chocolate ice cream or spaghetti sauce on your clothing, and you're in a social situation, and you experienced embarrassment, that's because of your personal existence view. The mind's clinging to this body, wanting to be perceived in the world a certain way, thinking that this is who you are. And now when you're not being perceived that way, you're going to experience those painful feelings of embarrassment in this example. Or if you've ever looked in the mirror and you see a pimple or a mole or a gray hair or a little bit of extra fat or something like that, and you became discontent because of it. This is because of the personal existence view. The mind's being shaken up because the mind thinks that this body is you and who you are as a person. Then there's something called self-identity. This self-identity is like your culture, your ethnicity, your sexual orientation, your nationality, your job or occupation. You might be clinging to this in your mind, thinking that this is who you are. So maybe I am American, or I am Canadian, or I am a Brit, or I am an Aussie, or I am Brazilian, or I am Japanese, or maybe I am a police officer, I am a doctor, I'm a lawyer, I'm a food server, I am a mom, I am a dad, I am a boyfriend, I am a girlfriend, I am a husband, I am a wife. Any of this I am, I am, I am, the mind is clinging to it and holding on to it. And now when you identify with these things and you cling to it, thinking that this is who you are, when you experience impermanence related to these things, you'll get shaken up. So say, for example, you've been a boyfriend or girlfriend or a husband or wife, and you identify with that's who you are as a person. Now when the relationship's over and you either break up, or maybe your partner dies or something like this, you'll feel uncomfortable because you identify with I am a boyfriend, I am a girlfriend. But now when you're single, you wanted to hurry up and get right back into another relationship, perhaps, because you wanted to assume that identity again. You didn't feel comfortable because the identity wasn't intact. Or if you've ever had a job or occupation where you were working maybe as a police officer, and now for 10, 20 years, you identify with I am a police officer. And then maybe you get injured and you can't do the work anymore, or maybe you retire, or maybe you've been laid off or fired from any particular job. Your mind might have struggled during that time because you might have felt like, I don't even know who I am anymore. Sometimes people come here to Thailand in search of themselves. They feel like, I don't even know who I am anymore. I need to go find myself. Well, you can't find yourself because there is no self. But the unenlightened mind is going to cling to the self-image and the self-identity, thinking that this is who you are. And because everything around you is impermanent, as long as you're clinging to this body or this mind and you're experiencing change or disagreeable contact related to it, you will struggle and have difficulties because you can't control what's happening in the world. So say, for example, I identify with I am American. And say I'm at dinner at a restaurant and two tables over, somebody is degrading and disparaging people from America. Well, if I identify with I am American and now I hear that, the mind's going to think they are talking about me because I am American. And now you'll get angry or frustrated or irritated. So you can evolve to a point where you understand that this body was born in a certain place. In my case, it's born in a land that we refer to as America, but it hasn't always been that, right? So I can understand that this body was born in that particular location, but the mind doesn't have to adopt the identity of I am American, because I can't control what other people say or do. So as long as you cling to any identity about your culture, ethnicity, your nationality, your sexual orientation, your job or occupation, or any number of other things, your mind clinging to those things as your identity, it'll struggle and have difficulties when you're experiencing this change. The same thing is true about the self-image, that this body is going to be constantly changing. So if you cling to this, wanting it to be permanent, then you will experience discontentedness. So the Buddha is explaining to you in the universal truth of non-self that there is no self, that this body is not you, this mind is not you, the choices and decisions that you make, it's not you. The feelings that you experience in the mind, this is not you, it's not who you are. So anything that you've made decisions about in the past that are unwise, you can let that go and realize that you don't need to feel guilty and shameful about those things that you've made decisions about in the past. Because at that time, you made the decision that you thought was best, but with a lack of wisdom, you might have made unwise decisions. And there's no need to feel guilty and shameful today, because those decisions in the past don't define who you are. So this body nor this mind is you. There is no self. But the challenge in the unenlightened mind is it has this confusion, this misunderstanding, this misperception. It has this personal existence view in there, thinking that this body is you or this mind is you. And when you realize non-self and you realize that this body nor this mind is you, you'll experience more peace and more joy. So while there is a body and there is a mind that has come together for this existence, and we refer to that as a person or a human being, that's not you. It's not who you are as a person. It's just a physical body and it's just a mind. So here's the way that you can independently verify this and see the truth for yourself, because that's the intellectual learning. And oftentimes people don't understand this when I first start sharing it with them, because they spent so much time accumulating this identity or this personal self-image, right? So you might not understand this 100%, and that's okay because you're going to need to revisit this multiple times. And when we get to chapter 16 in this series of group learning program, we're going to dive into personal existence view more detail, and I'm going to explain to you how to eliminate it. But now it's just an introduction to it. So let me show you how to independently verify this, even at this early stage, that there is no permanent self. Think about yourself when you were a child, a teenager, early adulthood, and now. Your character, your personality, and how you viewed yourself. Ask yourself, has that been constantly the same? Or has your views and opinions and your personality and your character been changing throughout this entire time? Well, of course, it's been changing. You're not the same person from your early childhood to teenage years to early adulthood and now. That this has been constantly changing. So you can see that there is no permanent self. You can also use these examples that say your arm was amputated and you only have one hand and one arm. Ask yourself, are you less of a person? Now that you have just one hand and one arm, are you less of a person? And in the vast majority of the cases, people say, no, I'm not less of a person. So there you go. You see on an intellectual level that the mind understands this body isn't you. Because if this body was you, when I asked you that question, if your arm is amputated, are you less of a person? You would say, yes, I'm less of a person. So intellectually, you can understand that this body isn't you, but the mind has this confusion, this misunderstanding, this misperception that when somebody comments about this body and says something about the body in a either positive and agreeable way or a degrading and diminishing and disagreeable way, you form feelings based on that. So if somebody compliments you about how beautiful or handsome you are, you might get pleasant feelings. Or if somebody says something negative or degrading about this physical body, you might get painful feelings. And that's because of the mind's confusion, that it's clinging to this body, thinking that this is who you are. So this is one of the ways you can independently verify it. And then here's a third way. I oftentimes ask students, point to yourself. Where are you? And they will typically point to their chest or their head or something like this. And if you point and you say, this is me right here, you need to look at what you're pointing to. You're pointing to a shirt. So if you took off your shirt and you hung it up and you pointed to it, ask yourself, is that you? Is that who you are as a person? That shirt you're wearing right now, if you're wearing a shirt, is that you? Right? Of course that shirt's not you, right? We throw away the shirt. So now, where are you? Someone might point again. Look at what you're pointing to. You're pointing to skin, right? So we took off the skin and we held up the skin and pointed to it. Is that who you are? That skin that you have right there? Is that you? Is that who you are? Is the skin? Well, of course not. That skin's not you. So we throw that away. So where are you? Someone might point. We've got bones. We've got muscle tissue, we've got organs and fluids and different things. None of those bits and pieces and parts are you. But with the mind's confusion, with this personal existence view in the mind, this pollution, the mind will have this confusion and misunderstanding, thinking that this is you. But there is no you. It's not there. But the mind will oftentimes continue to grasp and grasp and grasp. And it says, okay, well, if this body isn't me and this mind isn't me, then who am I? What am I? Right? The mind's going to keep grasping because it has this personal existence view. It's trying to grab onto something and say, this is me. This is who I am. But none of this stuff is you. It's just a physical body and just a mind that's come together for this existence. And we refer to it as a person, but this isn't you. It's not who you are as a person. So this universal truth of non-self helps you to learn to not cling and not to hold on to this body and not to hold on to this mind and thinking that this is who you are. So I'm going to pause here and see what questions you guys might have, if any at all. You can put that into Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom, or you can raise your hand in Zoom and ask any questions that you like. So let me know if you guys have any questions. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions anywhere. So I'm going to move to the next little building block that you need in order to understand the Four Noble Truths, and then we're going to get right into the Four Noble Truths. This is a particular set of words that we need to define so that you understand what we're talking about when we get to the Four Noble Truths. There's craving, desire, attachment, expectations, wants, holding, grasping, clinging. This is the mind's mental longing for something with a strong eagerness. The mind pulling in the direction for the objects of its affection. It's a longing, a yearning. The mind's thinking that the next new shiny object waiting around the corner is going to provide some kind of lasting satisfaction. So the mind chases it and chases it and chases it. It's almost like an unquenchable thirst that the mind just thinks, if I get that boyfriend or girlfriend or that husband and wife, everything in my life will be perfect. That's what I need. Husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, just give me one of those things and everything will be perfect in my life. Oh, more money. That's what I need. More money. If I have more money, everything will be perfect in my life. Oh, a nicer car. That's what I need. A brand new car. Give me that and everything will be perfect. Oh, that new house. That's what I need is the new house. That's what's going to make everything perfect in my life. It's like an unquenchable thirst. The mind just thinks the next new shiny object waiting around the corner is going to provide some lasting satisfaction. So it chases and chases and chases. If you've ever been in the mall and you saw a brand new pair of shoes and you're like, oh yes, brand new pair of shoes. Oh yes, 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 I want that so badly. Or a new phone or a new computer or something like this, or a new set of jewelry or something like this. This is the mind longing, yearning, chasing things, thinking that this object is going to provide some kind of lasting satisfaction. So you need to ask yourself if you understand what this is, because you should have observed this about your mind by now. And if you haven't, it's okay. You're going to need to start paying attention to your mind and see this longing and yearning, how the mind chases after things. This is the craving, desire, attachment, the wants, the expectations, the holding, the grasping, the clinging. This is a certain aspect of the mind. So now with an understanding of that, I'm going to move into the Four Noble Truths, helping you to understand the problem in the unenlightened mind, the cause of that problem, the elimination of it, and the path forward. This is where you have a real breakthrough to understanding what's finally causing these discontent feelings so that you can actually eliminate them. So the First Noble Truth is explaining to you the problem, that everyone that is unenlightened will experience discontentedness. The problem is that the mind's going up and down and up and down and up and down. It's forming its inner feelings based on some condition. This is the problem, that the mind can't be stable and steady and peaceful and joyful. It can't be happy permanently because the unenlightened mind is going up and down and up and down, experiencing these conditioned feelings. This is the problem that the unenlightened mind is experiencing. The second noble truth is explaining the cause of this problem. So the problem being discontentedness is caused by our own cravings, desires, attachments, because the mind wants everything to be permanent when everything in the world is impermanent. So I'm going to say this a few times and I'm going to give you some examples to help you. So that pleasant feelings, those conditional pleasant feelings that arise, change, and fade away, and ultimately are dissatisfying, those painful feelings, the anger, the sadness, the frustration, the neither painful nor pleasant, the shyness, the uncomfortableness, the dissatisfaction, this is all caused by craving, desire, attachment, the longing, the yearning, the chasing after the objects of your affection, the mind's wanting things to be permanent, but yet everything around you is impermanent. The mind's wanting and craving for things to be impermanent. Essentially, the mind is having this longing, yearning, craving for things to be permanent because it doesn't understand the universal truth of impermanence. It doesn't understand everything around you is impermanent. So it keeps craving this permanence. So here's some examples for you. If you've ever been in a relationship with a boyfriend or girlfriend, when you guys first got together, things couldn't have been better, right? When you first got together, so many pleasant feelings. They're showing you affection. You guys are going out to dinner and the movies. Maybe you're going to the mall together. Maybe you're going to the park. You're having these great conversations about all kinds of things. Maybe you're even having intimate contact. This is the mind experiencing pleasant feelings based on the condition of having this new relationship in your life and having this relationship and this affection, somebody that's calling you up, sending you text messages, checking in on you, and things like this. But then as time goes on and the relationship ends and it's over, now the mind experiences this impermanence. The mind doesn't like that. The mind doesn't like impermanence. It's craving permanence. It's wanting this relationship to be permanent. And now when the relationship is over, you experience sadness, anger, frustration, loneliness, boredom, things like this. Maybe resentfulness, maybe jealousy as you're experiencing the breakup of the relationship because the mind's holding on. It's craving for this relationship to be permanent. It's not the love that's causing the anger and the sadness. It's the mind holding on to this relationship, wanting it to be permanent. Even if you guys were together for the rest of your life, more likely than not, one of you guys would have died first. And now the mind holding on and craving permanence, you would have missed this person. You would have had loneliness and boredom and sadness and frustration. Because like when grandma and grandpa die, or mom or dad or brothers and sisters, when people are dying in your life and you're experiencing grief and sadness and misery or sorrow, you're not a bad person. You haven't done anything wrong. It's just that the mind's holding on. It's craving permanence. It's wanting grandma and grandpa to be permanent, but they are impermanent. They arise, they change, and they fade away. Just like all of us, we're all going to experience death because we are impermanent. We are a conditioned object. But as long as your mind's craving for grandma and grandpa to be permanent, or any other person that's close to you, when you experience this change of death, your mind's going to experience the painful feelings. Because the mind's craving is, I want them to be alive. And as long as they're alive, I'll be happy. But when they die, I'm going to be sad. The mind's forming its inner feelings based on this condition. The same thing is true if you've ever been to a wedding, right? If you've been to a wedding and you grieved, or the people around you grieve, this is because the mind's holding on to this person, wanting them to be permanent. And now this ceremony represents them going off into life. And you experience this impermanence where they're going off in life with another person. And the mind grieves during this period of time. Or if you've ever been dropped off at university or college and your parents grieved, or you grieved, or maybe if you can remember back to when you went to preschool or kindergarten, if you were grieving, this is the mind craving mom and dad to be permanent. I thought they were permanent, even all the way back to the womb, when we are in the womb of our mother. And everything couldn't be better. We were hanging out in there. We had everything taken care of. We were getting all our food and water. Man, it couldn't have been better in there. And the next thing you know, here comes this impermanence. Boom, come out into the world. And now we experience this impermanence. And right away, we're discontent. We're crying because we're craving permanence. We're wanting to be in the womb permanently. That's what the mind's craving and holding on to, craving permanence. So it's not love that's causing these discontent feelings, because love is a genuine interest in seeing all beings be well. This is active goodwill. We're going to talk about true love when we get to chapter 15. So it's not love that's causing this sadness and anger and loneliness and boredom and all these other feelings related to relationships. It's the mind craving permanence. The mind is longing, yearning. Here's another more simple example, that if you ever had a brand new car or some other object, maybe you bought this brand new car, you drove it off the parking lot, and you were so proud of that car. You got all these pleasant feelings. It's the perfect car for you. And now you park it, you go inside, and you come out, and there's a scratch on your car. Oh man, you might be so frustrated with this scratch, right? Well, it's not the scratch that's causing your discontentedness. And it's not the person who caused the scratch. That's not what's causing your discontentedness. What's causing the discontentedness is the mind's craving for this car to be permanently beautiful. That's what the mind's experiencing, is the craving, desire, attachment is the cause of the frustration or that anger or whatever feeling that the mind is experiencing. Now, we're not talking about what's wise or unwise here, because it's wise not to scratch somebody's car. It'd be wonderful if nobody ever scratched your car, but that's not the world you live in. You live in an impermanent world. And as long as your mind's craving permanence, then when you experience impermanence, your mind's going to be shaken up by that, because the mind's craving something that it can't get. So another way to say the mind's craving permanence is to say that it does not like impermanence. It's shaken up by this impermanence. And the car is impermanent. The paint's going to fade. The upholstery is going to get ripped and torn. The tires are going to need to be changed. This car is impermanent. So we make decisions to try to take care of the car, but fully realizing you need to understand that it's impermanent. It's going to experience change. But if you're craving for it to be permanent, you will be shaken up when you experience impermanence related to this car. So now that I've shared with you the understanding intellectually to be able to learn the second noble truth, now you reflect on this. Each one of these Four Noble Truths, you can reflect on it and independently verify that it's true. So take a recent situation where you have been angry or frustrated or agitated or annoyed. It could have been this morning. It could have been yesterday. It could have been last week. Look at that situation. Now, at that time, you might have been trying to blame somebody else, because that's what the unenlightened mind does, is it will tend to blame other people for the feelings that you experience. Again, you're not a bad person. You haven't done anything wrong necessarily. This is just the lack of wisdom that the unenlightened mind has. So rather than blaming other people, because that's not what the problem is, the real problem is inside your own mind. It's the craving, desire, attachment. So look at that same situation with this new wisdom, with these fresh eyes. Look at that situation. There was something your mind wanted that it didn't get. And if you would have got what you wanted, you would have gotten pleasant feelings. But because you didn't get what you wanted, you got angry or sad or frustrated, or irritated, or some other discontent feeling. You can see that the mind was longing, yearning, it was craving. And if you have difficulties with that one, let me know. Because I have people sometimes share, hey, David, I was at home and my house looked a certain way. I went to work and I came home and my wife had a craft project all over the house. The house was a wreck and I got frustrated. How did my mind cause this discontentedness? I wasn't even there. She's the one who messed up the house, right? Well, I need to remind the person. Well, your mind's craving for the house to look a certain way permanently. When you went to work, it looked a particular way and your mind was craving that and wanting it to look that way. And when you came home and you experienced this change, this impermanence, with your mind craving and longing and yearning for the house to look a certain way, you get frustrated. So the house can't look that way permanently. It's impossible. But now with this craft project all over the house, your mind experiences discontentedness because it's craving permanence, right? And just like the house looking a certain way when you went to work, that was impermanent. This craft project being all over the house, that's impermanent too. Your wife's going to eventually put it away, and you may even help her to put it away too. So as long as the mind's craving permanence, it's going to experience this up and down and up and down. It's going to experience the problem, the discontentedness. And when you're experiencing feelings like anger and sadness and frustration, those painful feelings, you might falsely attribute those to something external. You might think that it's this person or this situation that's causing these feelings. This is the lack of wisdom. This is the wrong view. That because of wrong view, the mind doesn't understand what it doesn't understand. It doesn't realize that the true problem is within your mind. So you will falsely attribute these painful feelings to a person or to a situation. And when you do, what you'll end up doing is pushing that person away out of your life. I'm sure you've done this before, where you thought a particular person was the cause of your anger or sadness or frustration, and you might have pushed them out of your life, thinking that that was going to solve the problem. Or you tried to push the situation out of your life, thinking that was going to solve the problem. But it didn't, because the problem is still occurring. You're still getting angry. You're still getting agitated. You're still getting annoyed. It's just another craving that's being triggered. So the problem is still existing, because pushing somebody away isn't the cause of the problem. That's not going to fix it, because that's not the cause. If that was the true cause of the problem, when you push that person away, you wouldn't get angry or irritated or annoyed anymore. So that's the first thing that the unenlightened mind will do when it has wrong view, is it'll push people away out of your life. Or you'll become bitter and harsh and hostile towards that person, thinking that that's going to somehow solve it. You might try to fear this person into doing things your way. Or the third thing you might do is you might put your expectations on this person, trying to control them and get them to do things your way. The mind thinks, if I can just get this person to fulfill my cravings and my desires, I'll get those pleasant feelings. So the mind's stuck in this constant cycle of it experiences cravings. You have these painful feelings, you push people away, you're bitter, harsh, and hostile to them, or you put your expectations on them, and now those people might choose to leave out of your life. But even if you convince them to do things your way, it's only a matter of time before they do something else that you don't like or that you don't agree with. So you stay stuck in this continuous problem because of the lack of wisdom, because of the unknowing of true reality, because you haven't penetrated the Four Noble Truths to be able to see the truth, that it's your own mind that's causing these discontent feelings. So you can independently verify this Second Noble Truth, that it's your own mind that's causing this discontentedness. Then the Third Noble Truth is helping you to understand the solution, that to eliminate discontentedness, you need to eliminate the craving, desire, attachment, because that's the cause. If you understand the Second Noble Truth, that the cause of the problem is craving, desire, attachment, then the Third Noble Truth is easy, because to eliminate discontentedness, you eliminate the craving, desire, attachment that's causing it. And you can independently verify this too. Because remember back to that relationship where when you guys broke up, you were angry and frustrated, irritated for a few days or a few weeks or a few months, maybe even a few years. Maybe you're still angry. Well, eventually, when you let go and you were like, you know what? If he or she wants to be with another person, so be it. Let them be. May they be happy. Or, you know what? If they would like to be with someone else, it doesn't matter. If they would like to move to another city and not be around me, that's okay. And eventually your mind let them go. And when you let it go, you regained your peace. You regained your joy because you let go. Your mind eliminated its craving, desire, attachment. But the mind doesn't know how to do that in the unenlightened state. It holds on and holds on and holds on. So we have certain tools and techniques that target this craving, desire, attachment. That's the breathing mindfulness meditation. That's why you're training your mind to let go, let go, let go. Your goal isn't to eliminate your thoughts in this meditation. It's training the mind to let go, let go, let go. So if 20, 30, 50 times during your meditation, you have to let go, this is very good for your mind. Because with craving, desire, attachment, you're going to hold on to things really tightly. So in the training of breathing mindfulness meditation, you're training your mind to let go so that in daily life, you can easily let go. And then ultimately, you get to the point where you never grab on. You never hold on craving permanence. That's where you can eventually evolve to. And we also practice generosity. This is the giving, the sharing, the more than is strictly required in any given situation without any expectation of anything in return. This is where you're practicing the giving and sharing of your time, your effort, your energy, or your resources without any expectation of anything in return. This is helping you to live open-handedly and train your mind to let go. So these two teachings are actually targeting craving, desire, attachment, but there's other things you need to learn as well. It's not just breathing, mindfulness, meditation, and generosity. And this is where the fourth noble truth comes in. The path to eliminating discontentedness is the Eightfold Path. This is the complete perfect plan that's going to guide you to enlightenment, where the Buddha lays out all the individual factors that you need to learn and practice in order to train your mind to get to enlightenment. But this Eightfold Path starts with right view. That's why we start with the Four Noble Truths. What right view is to have the right view that your mind is causing your own discontentedness, that it's craving, desire, attachment that's causing this. And you need to independently verify that to be able to cultivate the wisdom to know the truth with 100% certainty. Because as long as you have wrong view, where you're blaming other people or something external for the problems that you're experiencing, you'll never solve your problem. You'll never eliminate anger or sadness because the mind is having this false belief that something external is causing your discontentedness. So this is why you push people away or you push the situation away. This is why you're bitter and hostile and angry towards people. This is why you put your expectations on people and they feel pressured and they might choose to leave out of your life. This is why the relationships keep getting broken over and over and over again. You can't maybe sustain a long-term relationship that it's only a matter of time before somebody does something you disagree with and now the relationship is over. And you might push them aside or they might push you aside. So as long as you have wrong view, you'll falsely believe that the problem is something external and you'll never solve the problem. And remember, you've got the ego in there, that arrogance, that pride, that boastfulness, the conceit, thinking that you're so right and everybody else is so wrong. The mind's going to try to convince you that everybody else is the problem, right? So if you understand that craving, desire, attachment is the cause of your discontentedness and you can see that and penetrate it, you can establish right view, where now that you understand that the problem is inside your own mind, this craving, desire, attachment, now you can apply the tools and techniques to actually eliminating it. Because if it was everybody else that was causing the problem in your mind, then you've got to train the whole world to do things your way. You've got to train 8 billion people to do things your way, and this is impossible. But you can train one mind. You can train one mind, and that's your own mind. So that's what the Buddha shares with you and all the other factors, is how to train your own mind to be able to now eradicate the problem of discontentedness through eliminating the cause, which is the craving, desire, attachment. When you eliminate the cause that's producing these discontent feelings, when you purify the mind, you'll no longer experience any anger or sadness ever again because your mind's been purified. And this all starts with right view. This is the foundation that's going to help you to now learn right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. And this is what I'm going to teach you next week in our class on Sunday, Chapter 5. This is the wisdom, moral conduct, and mental discipline section of the Eightfold Path. It's organized into these three sections. And now, building on right view, you'll be able to fully transform your mind, purify it, and now experience the peace and joy of the enlightened mind. Essentially, this Eightfold Path is like eight individual dials that you're dialing in and helping to produce a better and better quality mind. It's kind of like a speaker system. If you were dialing in and tweaking these dials in one by one by one, you would get a better and better quality sound out of these speakers. And that's what's going to help you to now produce a better and better quality mind, that you dial in this Eightfold Path into your life more and more closely. So this is everything that I have to share with you guys today. I'll open up to see what questions you guys might have related to the path to enlightenment, this particular teaching of the three universal truths, the four noble truths, or anything you would like to discuss related to what I've shared today, or anything else that you'd like to ask questions about. You can put that into Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom, or you can raise your hand in Zoom and ask any questions that you like. So let me know if you guys have questions. Okay, it looks like Mayu Lee is asking a question here on Facebook. Teacher, when our mind have a breakthrough and our life improved tremendously, is this mainly the mind that have transformed or also the karma? It's actually both. That by cultivating wisdom and now making wiser decisions, some of those wiser decisions are to train your own mind. And then as you're training your mind, you're making wiser decisions in the world. You're no longer making decisions through the pollutions of mind, that the pollutions have reduced more and more and more. And now the wholesome qualities are increasing more and more. By making those wiser decisions, you're producing wholesome karma. So it's actually through transforming your mind that you will now make wiser decisions, and those wiser decisions are producing more wholesome karma or wholesome results in your life. So it's all those things coming together that are experiencing transformation and improvement in your life. Okay. I don't see any other questions anywhere. So you guys must be understanding this to a certain degree. So what I'll do then is just thank all of you guys for joining. Thank you for your interest and dedication to learning and practicing the teachings. This is where we're now going to walk through all the teachings. This is where you're going to learn the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path. You're going to learn about the Middle Way, the Five Precepts, the Three Poisons or the Three Unwholesome Roots, the Natural Law of Karma, What is Merit. Each week we're going to be progressing and going deeper and deeper into the teachings, helping you build a real foundation in the path to enlightenment. And as you're learning, reflecting to independently verify and practice and integrating the teachings into your life, this is where you're going to see the real results that Mayu Lee is asking about, because she's somebody who took this program last time when I taught it. You're going to see all this transformation occurring as the mind's awakening to more and more of this wisdom. But you're going to need to, of course, learn in class, you know, read the book. If you have access to that, you can download it from the website for free. You can print it. You can get printed versions at the temple that I teach here in Chiang Mai, or you can order them on Amazon. So you'd like to be coming to class, reading the book, and doing your meditations. And this is going to help you to gradually awaken the mind so that you can experience more and more improvement to the condition of the mind and your life. So next week, we'll be sharing the Eightfold Path, which is the path for all humans to enlightenment. If you're going to get to enlightenment and get to this peaceful and joyful mental state, you would need to know the Eightfold Path inside and out, backwards and forwards. So I taught it once at the beginning of the group learning program, walking through in three individual classes. But now I'm going to teach it again, because you need to revisit that and really deeply soak it in. But I'm going to teach it all in one class, because we've already gone through into a deep dive in that in our previous classes. So if you've never learned the Eightfold Path with me, it's okay, because I'm going to teach it in our next class. But you might decide to go back and look at those recorded classes of the individual ones of wisdom, moral conduct, and mental discipline as I was teaching that. And then this Wednesday, I'm going to be teaching starting a four-part series on Buddhist chanting. So we'll start the very first one on Wednesday, and you're welcome to learn that live, or you can listen to the recordings as well. So we have these classes on Sunday and Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Thai time and 9 p.m. So depending on where you are, that might be Saturday evening or Sunday morning. So you need to look at your local time zone. So that way you can tune in. And when you can't tune in live, there's the recordings for you. And you're always welcome to reach out and schedule personal guidance. You can ask questions through the Facebook group, through asking questions in class. You can send private messages, or you can schedule personal guidance and we'll meet in Zoom one-on-one. And you can schedule that through our website. So thank you all for joining, and perhaps we'll see you guys in one of these future classes. Have a very wonderful and lovely rest of your day. We'll see you next time. Sawadee ka.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To provide support for this podcast, visit patreon.com/supportBuddha. To access more teachings, visit buddhadailywisdom.com. There, you will discover a full range of courses, retreats, and online resources to assist you on the path to enlightenment. Remember to establish a daily, consistent meditation practice, along with learning and practicing these teachings. A well-developed meditation practice is the foundation in which to train the mind to attain enlightenment.